it's a long way to Richmond, rolling north on 95. With a redhead riding shotgun and a pistol by my side. Tearing down that highway like a modern day Bonnie and Clyde. We met at a truck stop, Johnson City, Tennessee. I was gassing up my Firebird when I heard her calling me. Said, which way are you headed, boy?
Down the road I go with Travis Tritt. Wait a minute. That's not supposed to be on there. Come on, man. What the hell? Okay. I don't want to play it over again. Travis Tritt, pretty good old boy. Sings some good stuff. modern day Bonnie and Clyde. Better watch out who you pick up on the highway. Well, these redheads, man, you get in a joint fast. Well, it's April 16th, 2015, and it's Thor's Day. I like that. That rolls off my tongue real well. Thor's Day. That's right. What a mighty man of valor. Symbolic, of course, but I'm sure we had men back in the old days that were a lot like that, especially the berserkers. And the berserker part of our race has been asleep for a long time, but it's time to get the berserkers out again. Wake up, berserker man. We're going to battle. But we're not going to battle stupid. We're going to battle smart, okay? That movie I mentioned yesterday, Chaos, was a damn good movie, but the premise was a bunch of crap. They had this super bank robbery, and it was very well put together, and all that kind of stuff. But who robs banks? You got to be an idiot to make armed robberies on a bank. You got to use a computer if you're going to rob a bank. That's where they get all the money. And then if they catch them, they only get a few years on a country club prison spot. But you go armed robbering a bank, and you come away with a hell of a lot less money and a lot more pain. But they do make good movies. It's not as exciting to watch a guy take a bank for $100 million with a computer and a bow tie as it does to try to take over a bank physically. As far as I'm concerned, I like to see all the big banks robbed, get our money back. They robbed us. They robbed the whole country. They caused us to go into super duper debt. So I have no sympathy for the big banks at all. Well, let's see what Stray Dog's been up to here. Hi, TT. Wait a minute. Let me get my earphones on here. I've got some fresh intel for you. I just got back from the DMV, inspection station, the same place where I was last year. I went to and was served by a white Iranian who was nice and respectful, clean and courteous. Not so this year. It took three niggers to do what one white man did last year. However, the nigger did leave me a gift on my driver's seat, and I didn't realize this until I had left the facility. For the last 3 hours, I have been trying to get that nigger smell out of my whites-only car. Anyone still in New Jersey, do not use the state-run inspection service. Use a local garage. Also, do you know why the Republicans support amnesty for alien invaders? It's to push the niggers out. That's got to be pretty hard to do without a police state. Mestizo invaders pose the greatest threat to niggers, and by granting mestizos amnesty, that would mean all the niggers would lose their jobs in the hospitals, post office, and any other official place of business. That because of regulation, cannot hire mestizos. Well, yeah, but you're going from the frying pan into the fire. When need be, in mass, the Negroes could be handled a lot easier than the mestizos. Because the mestizos have not only Mongol blood, but sometimes some white blood. And they're smarter. They think better. And so if you replace the Negroes with the mestizos, you're back in a even maybe a worse boat. You got to start with the weakest link first. However, I wouldn't mind that as these blacks get pushed farther to the wall, that there develops a real race war between the mestizos and the blacks. It's already going on in some areas of the country, in the cities, block to block. So that's something that could be promoted. But thank you for your contribution there, Stray Dog. I like a white working man's point of view. We don't like those double talkers like some of the more affluent right-wing racialists. Those people? No, don't like that. I like people who talk straight. I like people who talk straight to me, no matter if I like it or not. and I talk straight to other people. That's the way it should be done. Don't pull any punches. And most of all, don't throw the fight. Well, it looks like the Russians have it right again. They just announced their first phase. Covers years 2015 to 2018, while the second will cover 2019 to 2025. The policy concept is a set of 65 measures aimed at increasing white birth rates, making parenthood less financially burdensome, and improving the welfare of children born into poor families as well as orphans. The policy has managed to survive the budget cuts forced by the economic crisis, suggesting it is a very high priority by the Russian government. Well, could you imagine that happening here in the democratic United States? Can you imagine? Shit, that would never happen. Without some kind of change to that monstrous monstrosity in Washington, D.C. and Wall Street.
Exclusive. In August 2013, when the United States government almost went to war in Syria over a sarin attack, suspicions that it was a rebel false flag were ridiculed. But new disclosures about a rebel role in kidnapping NBC's Richard Engel several months earlier show the rebels knew such propaganda tricks, says Robert Perry. By Robert Perry in December 2012, Syria's U.S.-backed moderate rebels pulled off a false flag kidnapping and rescue of NBC's chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel and his crew, getting the crime blamed on a militia tied to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, a propaganda scam that NBC played along with despite having evidence of the truth. On Wednesday, Engel, who had blamed an Assad-linked Shiite militia in reports both for NBC and Vanity Fair, acknowledged that a new examination of the case persuaded him that the group that kidnapped us was Sunni, not Shia. He added that the kidnappers put on an elaborate ruse to convince us they were Shiite Jabiha militiamen. Richard Engel, NBC's chief foreign correspondent. Richard Engel, NBC's chief foreign correspondent. According to an account published by the New York Times on Thursday in its Business Day section, NBC executives had evidence from the beginning that the actual kidnappers were part of a Sunni criminal element affiliated with the Free Syrian Army, the loose alliance of rebels opposed to Mr. Assad. The Free Syrian Army has been the principal rebel force supported by the United States government, which, in April 2013, several months after Engel's high-profile ordeal, earmarked $123 million in aid to the group to carry out its war against Assad's government. The other significance of the Syrian rebels' successful false flag kidnapping slash rescue of Engel is that it may have encouraged them to sponsor other events that would be blamed on the Syrian government and excite the United States government and media to intervene militarily against Assad. On August 21, 2013, a mysterious sarin gas attack outside Damascus killed several hundred people, causing the United States officials, journalists, and human rights activists to immediately leap to the conclusion that Assad was responsible and that he had crossed President Barack Obama's red line against the use of chemical weapons and thus deserved the United States military retaliation. Within days, this political media hysteria brought the United States to the verge of a sustained bombing campaign against the Syrian military before contrary evidence began emerging suggesting that extremist elements of the Syrian rebel force may have deployed the sarin as a false flag event. Obama pulled back at the last moment, infuriating America's influential neoconservatives who had long put regime change in Syria near the top of their to-do list. In retrospect, the aborted the United States bombing campaign, if carried out, might well have so devastated the Syrian military that the gates of Damascus would have fallen open to the two most powerful rebel armies, Al-Qaeda's Nusra Front and the hyper-brutal Islamic State, meaning that the black flag of Islamic terrorism might have been raised over one of the Mideast's most important capitals. Dangers of bad journalism. The revelations about Engel's staged kidnapping slash rescue also illuminate the dangers of biased mainstream the United States journalism, in which the big news organizations take sides in a conflict overseas and shed even the pretense of professional objectivity. In the case of Syria, the major the United States media put on blinders for many months to pretend that Assad was opposed by moderate rebels until it became impossible to deny that the dominant rebel forces were Al-Qaeda's Nusra Front and the Islamic State. In late September 2013, many of the U.S.-backed, supposedly moderate rebels realigned themselves with Al-Qaeda's affiliate. In the case of Ukraine, the United States journalists have put on their blinders again so as not to notice that the U.S.-backed coup regime in Kiev has relied on neo-Nazis and other right-wing extremists to wage an anti-terrorist operation against ethnic Russians in the East who have resisted the overthrow of their elected president Viktor Yanukovych. When it comes to Ukraine, the more than 5,000 deaths, mostly ethnic Russians in the East, are all blamed on Russian President Vladimir Putin. See consortiumnews.com's Seeing No Neo-Nazi Militias in Ukraine. These biased storylines with the U.S. side wearing white hats and the other side wearing black hats are not only bad journalism but invite atrocities, because the U.S. side knows that the United States mainstream media would reflexively blame any horrors on the black-hatted bad guys. In the case of Engel's staged kidnapping slash rescue, The New York Times belatedly re-examined the case not in the context of a disinformation campaign designed to excite war against Syria's Assad, but as a follow-up to disclosures that NBC's longtime anchor Brian Williams had exaggerated the danger he was in while covering the Iraq War in 2003, explaining the story's placement in the business section where such media articles often go. The most serious journalistic offense by NBC in this case appeared to be that it was aware of the behind-the-scenes reality that individuals associated with the U.S.-backed rebels were likely responsible, but still let Engel go on the air to point the finger of blame in Assad's direction. The Times reported that the kidnapping group, known as the North Idlib Falcons Brigade, was led by two men, Azo Kassab and Shukri Ajuje, who had a history of smuggling and other crimes. NBC executives were informed of Mr. Ajuje and Mr. Kassab's possible involvement during and after Mr. Engels's captivity, according to current and former NBC employees and others who helped search for Mr. Engel, including political activists and security professionals. Still, the network moved quickly to put Mr. Engel on the air with an account blaming Shiite captors and did not present the other possible version of events. NBC's own assessment during the kidnapping had focused on Mr. Kassab and Mr. Ajuje, according to a half dozen people involved in the recovery effort. NBC had received GPS data from the team's emergency beacon that showed it had been held early in the abduction at a chicken farm widely known by local residents and other rebels to be controlled by the Sunni criminal group. NBC had sent an Arab envoy into Syria to drive past the farm, according to three people involved in the efforts to locate Mr. Engel, and engaged in outreach to local commanders for help in obtaining the team's release. These three people declined to be identified, citing safety considerations. Ali Bakran, a rebel commander who assisted in the search, said in an interview that when he confronted Mr. Kassab and Mr. Ajoje with the GPS map, Azo and Shukri both acknowledged having the NBC reporters. Several rebels and others with detailed knowledge of the episode said that the safe release of NBC's team was staged after consultation with rebel leaders when it became clear that holding them might imperil the rebel efforts to court Western support. Abu Hassan, a local medic who is close to the rebel movement, and who was involved in seeking the team's release, said that when the kidnappers realized that all the other rebels in the area were working to get the captives out, they decided to create a ruse to free them and blame the kidnapping on the Assad regime. It was there that the play was completed, he said. Speaking of the section of road Mr. Engel and the team were freed on, Thayer Al-Shaib, another local man connected with the rebel movement who sought the NBC team, said that on the day of the release we heard some random shots for less than a minute coming from the direction of the farm. He said that Abu Ayman, the rebel commander credited with freeing the team, is related by marriage to Mr. Ajoje, and that he staged the rescue. The sarin mystery. While it's impossible to determine whether the successful scam about Engel's kidnapping / rescue influenced the thinking of other Syrian rebels to sponsor a false flag attack using sarin, some of the same propaganda factors applied with the United States news media jumping to conclusions about Assad's responsibility for the sarin deaths and then ridiculing any doubters. Yet, like the Engel kidnapping affair, there were immediate reasons to doubt the groupthink on the sarin attack, especially since Assad had just invited United Nations inspectors to Syria to investigate what he claimed was an earlier use of chemical weapons by the rebels. As the inspectors were unpacking their bags in Damascus, the sarin attack occurred in a Damascus suburb, a provocation that quickly forced the inspectors to address the new incident instead. The inspectors were under extraordinary the United States pressure to implicate Assad, especially after Secretary of State John Kerry described a massive sarin attack using multiple rockets that he said could only have come from a Syrian military base. But the inspectors only found one crudely made sarin-laden rocket, and when rocket experts examined it, they estimated that it could only travel a couple of kilometers, meaning it was likely fired from rebel-controlled territory. See ConsortiumNews.com's The Collapsing Syria Sarin Case. Even as the evidence implicating the Syrian government evaporated, the mainstream, the United States news media and many wannabe important bloggers continued to defend the earlier groupthink on the sarin attack and reject the possibility that the sainted rebels had done it. But the false flag Engel kidnapping / rescue shows that such propaganda stunts were in the rebels' bag of tricks. Investigative reporter Robert Perry broke many of the Iran-Contra stories for the Associated Press and Newsweek in the 1980s. You can buy his latest book, America's Stolen Narrative, either in print here or as an e-book, from Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. You also can order Robert Perry's trilogy on the Bush family and its connections to various right-wing operatives for only $34. The trilogy includes America's Stolen Narrative. For details on this offer, click here.
That was our electronic report from Robert Perry of Consortium News. It was one of the best reporters I've seen on the scene, especially about exposing the neocons and so forth. And so we'll call him our electronic exposure of the Syrian situation, which I know and probably you know has been a scam from the very beginning, trying to topple Assad. So I'm going to send out more of these that are transferred to from print to audio, and because I think many times it's a lot easier for people to handle the audio than reading all the time. So this will be our White Aryan Resistance field reporter, electronic field reporter. Well, here's an article that pretty well explains why the racial part of the right wing is in so much trouble all the time. This is Associated Press, which you can't trust, but I'm going to read you this article. Raleigh, North Carolina, a man charged with killing a print shop employee at a North Carolina community college says he's a neo-Nazi who hates homosexuals. Kenneth Morgan Stansel III told Raleigh's WRAL-TV he killed Ron Lane earlier this week because Lane had made sexual advances to Stansel's 16-year-old brother. In a telephone interview from a Daytona Beach, Florida jail, Stansel said Lane tried to take advantage of his brother. Quote, he ain't physically touched him, but he was in the proposal to try to and wasn't going to let that happen. And I wasn't going to let that happen, Stansel said. Stansel said Lane was looking for Stansel on Facebook and found his brother. A Goldsboro police spokesman did not immediately return a phone message Thursday about the allegation. Well, let's see here. Quote, I'd do anything necessary to take care of my family, unquote, Stansel said. Well, that's, you see, these things can be handled a lot simpler than that. You don't have to go out and kill somebody. He said he has no regrets about the shooting. Quote, I did what I did and I've got to live with it. If I get life, I just get life. I'm a murderer, you know? What do I have to care? I don't give a damn if I go back to society. See, this guy was screwed up before, and I got a picture of him here with all his neck areas tattooed up, his face is all tattooed up, and so forth. And you see, that's what the press used against everybody on our side. Let's see here. Stansel said he was a neo-Nazi. Now remember, that term means bullshit. Why don't they say racist? If he's a racist, well, what kind of a racist was he? But anyhow, neo-Nazi is just a media term that means nothing except to hate anybody that they call a neo-Nazi. And it ends up that sentence, who is concerned about the future of white children? Are there many ways that they can try to help in white children than some minor thing happens about insulting your brother, you go out and murder somebody? Quote, I try to look out for my fellow white people, he said. I don't believe in race mixing. Well, I wonder if the guy he killed was white. I bet he was. Just because he was a homosexual? He was asked if he hates homosexuals. Quote, "Yes, I do, with a passion," he replied, though he said that it was only one of the reasons he killed Lane, who had been his supervisor in a work-study program at the college before he was fired for absenteeism. Stansel also told a television station he had killed three other people, including two in Wayne County area. But the sheriff's department told the station it has no report of any unsolved homicides that matched Stenzel's account. Well, you know, I don't totally negate violence if it's intelligence violence and it's used proportionally. But this idea of every time you're insulted a little bit, going out and killing somebody is ridiculous. It's nothing as a racial separatist. White racial separatists that I would go along with. But I keep talking, and most of these guys aren't listening. They're getting this shit from the right-wing racial factions. They get it from the people on Stormfront. They get it on from people on VNN and places like that. Or even if they don't get it directly, they read that into it instead of saying, "Now look, you can't solve this problem like that." And I think this guy's using his problems at his workplace and losing his job as an excuse to go out and kill a white homosexual. Well, I don't believe in chasing down white homosexuals. I mean, if a white homosexual has done something really bad, it'd be the same as anybody else that did something really bad. But I don't believe in waylaying him and killing him and beating him. That gains nothing. I've had no problem. No homosexual has caused me any personal problems in my whole life. But I guess if I really wanted to, I could go out and find them. But that's ridiculous. We're running an operation here has to do with white racial separation. You got to keep your mind on the ball. You got to keep hammering away at the root causes of our problems. But you see, the Associated Press hates anybody that's racially proud, and they're going to take every one of these things, you know, whereas they'll give niggers a break all the time. Poor downtrodden nigger boy didn't have any choice to go out and murder a whole white family. They'll give them a break, but they'll take deals like this and stretch it just like they did the Glenn Miller case. And these cases are bad, and I'm totally against them. But they will use them to paint us all in the same brush, with the same brush. There's nothing we can do about it except to say, well, we don't agree with it. But that's what you got to put up with. Another thing, a guy goes out and gets his whole face painted up with black paint in a tattoo form. Don't sound to me like he's too proud of being white. He's more proud of putting those symbols on his face that actually cover up his white skin. If you're around anybody like this, know people like this, try to get them listen to what I'm saying. Or anybody else is trying to talk sense to them, because we're not backing down, but on the other hand, we're not going out looking for trouble. Trouble will come to you from time to time, and you have to handle it the way you have to handle it. But these kind of things is totally, totally, totally beyond the pale. I'd also like to know what that homosexual supposedly said to his brother. Because some of these people are so ingrained with that, let's get the homosexuals, that any little thing could do something like set somebody off. It's the biggest source of this anti-homosexual thing comes right out of the Jewish Bible. That's where it got started. It's been in there for thousands of years. And so if you want to blame anybody for spreading anti-homosexual material, it came right out of the Christian church, the Catholic church, and their Jewish Bible. They say right in there, if a man layeth with a man, he should be killed. Well, what the hell? These guys read that stuff and away they go. Opening up my web service, I see this story is every newspaper in the world all over the United States, they're running this story. And, of course, it's not directed that much, really. The mood behind it is not just to go after this guy that killed the alleged homosexual, but is to smear the whole racial cause with the same brush. Of course, some of us old-timers know that the right wing has been laced with homosexuals for decades and decades, some of the highest leaders in the right wing. And that's why Rick Cooper, a longtime National Socialist who's passed away now, was investigating for several years, compiling who these people were, and I used to talk to him about it all the time. Well, unfortunately, he lived alone, and when he died, Covington got into his papers, and of course his Cooper's brother too, and Cooper's brother hated his activity. They got all those papers and destroyed them, and all that research on the homosexuality in the National Socialist struggle in this country went right to the dump. So that it was a big cover-up. So I think the right wing better start cleaning its own house before they start talking about other people. Here's a little more on that case in North Carolina. Now, the family of the murdered alleged homosexual said Wednesday that they forgive the man who has confessed to killing him. You know, this runs rampant in the Bible states, especially with these Christians. They jump to the position of forgiving killers of people in their family all the time. No matter which case it is, they're always forgiving them. You never forgive somebody that killed somebody in your family, no matter for what reason. You never forgive them. That's all Christian bullshit. Insanity. Insanity.
Say goodbye to Ron Lane.
He's the victim of this week's deadly shooting at Wayne Community College. The man who confessed to Lane's murder is now headed back to North Carolina to face charges here. WRAL's Micaiah Thurman joins us live in Goldsboro, where she just spoke with family members about the new developments. Micaiah, what have they told you? I know you talked to them about forgiveness and their feelings right now.
Bill and Layla, that's exactly right. Within the last few minutes, I spoke with Ron Lane's cousin, who is preparing for that funeral, but says he's struggling to cope with the loss. Lane was an 18-year employee at Wayne Community College. Police say Kenneth Stancil walked into the Wayne Community College print shop where Lane worked and killed him. Today, his family members say Lane's kind heart will be greatly missed.
It's going to be a loss for community because those that knew Ron knew that he loved the family. He loved his friends. He was somebody that people liked to be with, liked to talk to.
About 15 minutes, and one remarkable thing is that the family is not only asking for prayers for themselves, but they are also asking for prayers for Kenneth Stancil's family. Now, Kenneth Stancil is the man accused of shooting and killing Lane. They said that they have forgiven his action and understand that both families are dealing with a loss. Lane's funeral will be later this afternoon in Dudley at the Shoemate Falk Funeral Home, and that will be at 2 p.m.
All right, Micaiah Thurman, live in Wayne.
This country becomes more like a giant insane asylum every day. Every day it gets worse. It's probably in the food or in the water, and what the air you're breathing, and always present Christ insanity. And if this guy wanted to do something that promoted the homosexual cause more, he surely did it. This is going to give them the boost for all their laws and legislation and everything that support the homosexuals. It does just the opposite of what the guy wanted to do.